Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have the pleasure of talking with author S.G. Carden about her new novel, The Wolf's Torment. Stephanie Carden grew up in Manchester, New Hampshire, and graduated from Manchester Central High School in 1986. Her first attempt at writing was in high school, and it was called The Gemini Saga, a story about a female superhero from the future. Following high school, she entered the military and served for 11 years in the military police. Stephanie then moved to California and became a 911 dispatcher. She is the author of several novels, including Are Your Dirty Little Secrets, which received the iUniverse Editor's Choice Award, and her short story, The Music Box, which received an honorable mention in the 75th Writer's Digest competition. So today, Stephanie is here to talk to us about her new novel, The Wolf's Torment, and I'm just so happy to have her on the phone. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Stephanie.
It's great to be here, Juanita. I'm really excited.
Oh, great, great. So am I correct in saying that this is your fifth novel?
Yes, it is.
It is. Wow, when did you start writing novels?
Well, I think I actually got serious about it when I got out of the military in 1997. Came here to California, and my husband is an officer with LAPD, so while he was at work, I actually started getting behind the computer and just started writing.
Oh, great. And so are you writing every day at this point?
You know, I try to write a little bit every day. Right now, I'm focusing on writing a chapter a day.
That's quite a bit.
It is, actually.
That is quite a bit. Okay, so your new novel, The Wolf's Torment, it takes place in 1860s Moldavia?
Yes.
So would you tell us about this setting? You know, a lot of people won't know where this is, so tell us where this is and why you decided to use this particular area and that time period to backdrop your novel.
Moldavia is a part of Romania.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can picture where Romania is on the map, it borders the Black Sea. Some other countries it borders is the Ukraine, Hungary, and Bulgaria to the south.
Okay.
I picked Constanta, which is actually on the coast of the Black Sea, because I wanted the element of the sea coast there. I thought it would add to the supernatural and the mystique elements of the novel. I picked Moldavia because it borders Wallachia, where Vlad Dracula is from. And I kind of wanted to bring in that whole mystique of Dracula into the novel without actually bringing him into it.
Mm.
So that's why I chose that locale. And in the 1860s, there was a lot going on. The Industrial Revolution was just kicking off, and they were having all these new modern things come about, photography, advances in medicine, the steam, you know, the railroad and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to add those modernizing elements and what it would be like for the modernizing world to meet such old supernatural elements such as werewolves and vampires.
That's so interesting. My first impression when I think of, you know, Moldavia, Romania, back in that day, my picture is just really dark, you know, a lot of dark and mysterious. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a really on-point setting. Have you ever been to that region?
No, I haven't. About the closest I've been is Hungary. I was stationed in Kaposvár for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so why don't you tell us what happens in this story, get listeners up to date with or The Wolf's Torment?
It starts with a prologue, and our hero, Mihai, is the crown prince of Moldavia, and he's traveling with his mother back to the castle, and they're being pursued by an evil witch named Hecuba. And the whole backstory there is his mother was trained as a witch, and she was promised into service to Hecuba, but she didn't go. Instead, she met Mihai's father and married him, became the queen of Moldavia. And so she's kind of been hiding out there. And Hecuba finds her, and now they're on the run. And in the scene, Hecuba actually manages to overturn the carriage. Mahai's mother and Hecuba have a confrontation, and then sadly his mother dies. And so he witnesses all this, and he realizes that there are just supernatural elements that he's probably going to have to deal with, you know, as he grows up. And then we move forward, and he's a young man, and he's in London receiving an education. And his father comes to visit him and says, hey, it's time to come back to Moldavia. You know, I'm dying, and you need to learn the art of statescraft before I actually pass. And Mahai's not really in a position to do that. He's met a woman he's in love with, Alexandria, and he just really doesn't want to go. But his father convinces him that, you know, he has to. And so he and his friend Victor travel back to Moldavia with his mistress, Alex, who was expecting his child. And Mahai reconciles himself to the fact that he's going to have to go through his arranged marriage. And it's tricky there, too, because there's relationship issues with Mahai and Alex. He's overheard Alex tell a friend that she's basically been using him. And
oh, gosh.
I know, and it really upsets him. So he becomes very disillusioned with love, and, you know, he's basically kind of emotionally detaching himself from his relationship with Alex, and now he has to marry this woman he barely knows, or he doesn't know at all, you know. And so that kind of is the start of my triangle there with Victor and Teresa and Mahai. Teresa's the woman who is Mahai supposed to marry.
Okay. How do we bring the supernatural and the werewolf element into the book?
Well, as they arrive in Bucharest, my werewolf, Bane, is walking down the street, and he sees Victor, and he's just automatically attracted to him, just, oh, I've got to make him into a wolf. He would be a fascinating wolf. And so he's kind of distracted. He doesn't really see where Victor goes. So it takes him a couple of weeks to actually hunt Victor down in Constanta and find out where Victor is. And he basically finds Victor as Victor's acting as the best man to Mahai and Teresa's wedding.
Okay.
And Victor himself is supposed to get married. He's met a young woman at the castle named Sonia. And so after Mahai and Teresa gets married, he takes Sonia to the Ukraine, Odessa, to be married. And on their honeymoon, that's when Bane actually catches up with Victor and bites him and makes him into a wolf.
Okay. Now, I understand that it was your intent to really create strong, a very strong character-driven story. And this really becomes evident as you chronicle Victor's 28-day transformation into a wolf. So would you tell us a little bit about this descent and how it's a little different than the typical short transformations that we see in werewolf stories?
Yeah, I really wanted to focus on that. You know, a lot of werewolf stories, we just see the werewolf in those 2 to 3 days that the moon is full.
Mm-hmm.
But I really did want to show Victor as a man struggling to maintain his grip on humanity, and he feels terrible, absolutely terrible, that this has happened on his honeymoon with Sonia. And Sonia just, she rejects him because she's witness to the whole thing. And complicating that relationship, too, Sonia's expecting.
Okay.
So, you know, they go back to Constanta and meet with Mahai and Teresa, and Victor confesses to Mahai what's been done, and Mahai's torn. He's like, oh, my God, this is my best friend, you know. And Victor really is an upstanding guy at this point, you know. I mean, he's always been there for Mahai. Mahai can talk to him about anything. He does whatever Mahai asks right away. And now all of a sudden you have the little seeds where, you know, Victor has serious issues to deal with, and it's going to distract from his loyalty to Mahai. Because of Sonia's rejection, Sonia stays in the castle, but she doesn't really want anything to do with Victor. And so Mahai makes arrangements for her to become a nurse, if that's what she wants, to give her some time and some space to make a decision about what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so she embraces it. But while she's nursing and away from the castle, Victor, who's always had an attraction to Teresa but would have never acted on it had he not been bit, start spending a lot of time with Teresa. And what it is Mahai has a lot of responsibilities with learning the art of statescraft as his father dies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
His father is suffering from syphilis, and so one of the effects of that is a type of dementia.
Yes.
And so you have to deal with the king's onslaught of dementia. He has to learn statescraft. Alexandria just had twins. So he's got a lot of pressure. He doesn't stay at home a lot. He doesn't spend a lot of time with Teresa, and it kind of puts Teresa and Victor in situations where they grow closer together despite themselves.
Okay.
And so the effects of the wolf, and the wolf wants it right now, and, you know, I can take what I want, I'm powerful, and stuff like this, begin to play on Victor's psyche.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you also, with Teresa and her character, you've incorporated another element of the supernatural with the witch and wolf relationship. Can you talk a little bit towards that?
Oh, yes. I love Teresa's family. They're witches. They've been witches for hundreds of years. And actually, there's a whole backstory of the Von Kraken witches that I'd love to get into, but it kind of plays into the sequel that I'm writing now.
Okay.
And anyway, Teresa has a brother and a sister who are just full-blown witches. Her father's a big old witch. They're all from Austria. He's an Austrian duke, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the family business, of course, is witchcraft. And what it is her father possesses the art of divination.
Mm-hmm.
And when Teresa was born, it came to him and told him that Teresa should not be raised as a witch. So while the whole family are just full-blown witches and so into witchcraft, she hasn't been raised as one. She knows nothing about it, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, her sister Beatrice kind of slips here and there every so often, but Teresa doesn't really know what to make of it, so she just kind of ignores it.
Mm-hmm.
Really kind of funny, the relationship she has with Beatrice.
Interesting.
Anyway, so Teresa is a witch, doesn't know it, and a wolf needs two things. He needs to eat human flesh, meat, blood,
mm-hmm.
to sustain him, and then he needs to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the best partner to have sex with is a witch, which Teresa is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that adds another element to their attraction, Teresa being a witch and not really knowing it, and Victor even being more compelled to be near her because of her, you know, witchiness.
Yes. Boy, I can see a pretty intense love triangle happening here.
Yes, it definitely builds in the first half of the novel.
Yeah. So what is your interest in the supernatural? Were you always a fan of wolf and witch stories?
You know, I guess it started when I was a really young kid. You know, one of the earliest things I remember is, you know, my mother and my father and my sister and I sitting in front of Creature Double Feature and watching all those stories, you know, with the vampires and the witches and the wolves. And I just thought that was interesting. You know, when Anne Rice came out with her Vampire Chronicles and the Mayfair Witches, I just loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Just completely absorbed in those novels.
Yes, yes.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
So I've heard that one of the challenges, and I think actually you've said this in an interview that I heard, was that a writer in this genre, in the supernatural horror genre, there is a challenge in writing and tapping into the element of fear for the reader. And I just found this very interesting, and I'd like you to explain that a little further and what the challenges were for you in writing this book?
Well, one of the things I found was the mechanics of actually building fear, you know, writing short, maybe choppy sentences in a row.
Mm-hmm.
He saw Bane, the hair, the bristles on the back of his neck, you know. Those type of sentences in a row to build that heightening element, that kind of took me a while to get used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had been writing in the romance genre for a while, and where things are nice and flowy and, you know, very descriptive, and so I kind of had to switch it up a little bit. It was a good writing challenge for me.
It's quite different, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you actually get started in writing? Way back when, did you always have a dream of becoming a novelist at some point in your life?
Yes, I think I did. Like, when I was 6 years old, they used to have that old electric company thing on PBS. I don't know if you remember it, you know, with Sesame Street. And they used to have these Spider-Man little graphics. And so I would sit down at the table and try to make a Spider-Man comic book out of what I'd seen that day.
Oh, wow.
And then I got into reading comic books, and I was like, oh, I could write about this character, or I could write about that character. So I started, you know, making my own little mini kid book comic books. And that's how I first got into writing my Gemini Saga about a superhero from the future. And then it just kind of progressed from there as I got older and kind of got a little bit more mature in my writing.
Mm-hmm. So is the supernatural horror genre, is that kind of the area that you're wanting to explore in your writing now, or
yes.
Was that just for this book?
No, it's something that I'd kind of like to explore right now. Mm-hmm. I'm working on the sequel that has lots of supernatural elements. It's called Twilight Over Moldavia.
Mm.
And then I have another project called The Wolf's Kiss, and this kind of blends supernatural and romance elements into it. I'm looking forward to starting that one as well.
That's great. When can readers expect the sequel, Twilight Over Moldavia, to be out? Next year, maybe?
Next year, yeah. I'm really into it, so I hope to actually be finished with the writing by December. And then I can focus on my edit,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully next year around this time.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that the editing process is a challenge for you, or do you enjoy it?
You know, at first I found it challenging, only because I didn't have much focus of what I needed to focus on, and now I do, you know, cutting out excess words, focusing on dialogue tags, such as simply he said or she said, if it needs to be in there. So editing now, I've gotten more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you've written a lot of novels, so you're kind of, you learn as you go along, so I'm sure that every novel you write just builds on the experience.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Now, I am so fascinated in your writing in fan fiction, and I'd like you to explain to listeners today what fan fiction is, because this was the first I had actually heard that term.
Well, what it is you take something that's already been established and then just write stories on it. Oh, I'm sorry, just a minute. Okay.
I know that you're at home.
I'm at home with my children, so I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Well, what it is I really got into One Life to Live, the soap opera One Life to Live.
Uh-huh.
And so I wrote a fan fiction about that, and the fan fiction focuses on what happens behind the scenes of a soap opera. So I created my own fictional character and blended it in with the characters on the screen, and I just had a fun time with it. It was actually well received in the soap opera community.
It was. Did they take any of that and apply it to any of the shows, or
every so often I heard a reference to Postcards, which I thought was funny because when my character would bring mail into the executive producer, she would always read off Postcards.
Mm.
You know, the mail was coming in off the postcards. So I thought that was funny.
That is interesting. So aside from your writing, I know that you're a full-time 911 dispatcher for the LAPD.
Yes.
Would you tell us a little bit about this part of your life and what it is that you enjoy about this work?
Well, it can be very stressful because you can get such serious calls. Like, I've just been shot, somebody just stole my car. And you have to be able to react very quickly to get the information you need to tell the police and get them going. But it can also be very rewarding when, you know, you follow the call and the police have the suspect in custody. And you know, hey, you know, part of that was me. I did a good enough job. I got the information that they needed, and they were able to get out there.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it's a good balance for your writing is a good balance for the stressful aspect of this job?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's nice to kind of escape into the writing and just unwind a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Have any of the stories that you have heard through your 911 calls, have any of those stories made it into any of your books or inspired any?
No, not the books. Mm-hmm. I did write a short story called Joyride, where the officers run a plate and it comes back stolen. They start following it, and the car stops, and then all of a sudden it starts backing up into their car. And so they're afraid that, oh my gosh, we're gonna get killed. So they fire at the driver and his passenger, shooting them and killing them. And this is something that actually happened in our South Bureau. And what it is the driver was 14 years old.
Oh gosh.
And it caused a big stir in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you doing shooting a 14-year-old kid?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the other side, hey, you know, this 14-year-old kid is driving a stolen car, and he's backing his car straight up into the officer's car.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I wrote a short story on that incident, something similar, a more happier ending.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, I know that you were also in the military, as I mentioned earlier. Would you just go a little into your military background and then how that inspired, I believe it was your novel, Destination Berlin?
Oh, yes. Gosh, I entered the military in 1986 as an MP.
Uh-huh.
My first duty assignment was in Munster in Germany at the 583rd Ordnance Company. And, about halfway into my tour, I won Soldier of the Quarter. And one of the rewards was to go on the Berlin orientation tour. So they drove me up to Bremerhaven, and I caught the duty train, and we rode the duty train to Berlin. I got on the tour. It was great. And this was in 1988, right before the wall fell. So I had an opportunity to go through Checkpoint Charlie and into the East on a supervised visit. It was just absolutely fascinating. And, well, my visit was a little bit more low-key and nothing too exciting happened.
Mm-hmm.
My character in Destination Berlin, Sharon, as she's riding to Berlin on the duty train, has a little bit more excitement. The train derails in the middle of East Germany, and she's got to find her way to West Berlin, avoiding the Stasi and the KGB.
What, have you been back to Berlin since then?
I think the last time I was in Berlin was in 1996, and it had changed so much.
Yeah.
They had kept sections of the wall up, but most of it was down, especially around Brandenburg Gate. And you could just walk through and, you know, under the gate, and it was so clean, and it was just, there was a whole different vibe there, you know. You could feel it, you know, people were proud and happy, and, you know, it was nice to see the city united like that.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your interest in law enforcement and protection. It seems like that is quite a theme with the work you've done with the military police background, as well as the 911 dispatch that you're doing right now?
Well, I think, and again, this all stems back to my childhood love of comic books and seeing the superhero.
Mm.
You know, and the superhero always won, and they always did the right thing and the good thing, and they always helped people. And I think that instilled a drive in me to just want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
So, that kind of carried through with my military police and now as a dispatcher.
Interesting. So as a writer now, how do you keep your creative juices flowing? Is there anything that you do in particular to inspire your writing?
Well, let me see. I'd like to do a lot of research, and it's wonderful now that we have the Internet. You can do a lot of research online about all kinds of different things, and it's so stimulating. I love to read
mm-hmm.
about anything. I love history.
Mm.
And one of the nice things is, too, sometimes at work we have some downtime,
mm-hmm.
And we have a couple of breaks, so I can just unwind there by just going into a little corner and writing and reading for a little bit before I have to go plug in and take another call.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of research did you do for The Wolf's Torment?
I actually did a lot of online research, looked at a lot of maps. I think they have Google Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So I got a good chance to see what it looked like, and then I had to use my imagination to actually paint it not so industrialized.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, I have a couple of books. I read a book about the Black Sea itself,
mm-hmm.
and how that's been influential throughout literature. I got a couple of books on Romania and Romanian history. Mm-hmm. So,
what about the supernatural aspect?
Let me see, I kind of tried to make my own world, taking ideas and concepts from other places. The movie Underworld, I really liked that whole concept of the vampires and the werewolves kind of at war with each other, not really getting along.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a whole subplot in The Wolf's Torment with Bane and his pack, and how there's a love affair there with one of his werewolves with one of the vampires, and how nobody really approves of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was just to help build the supernatural elements in the book.
Mm-hmm. So do you think your sequel, that will be the end of this storyline, or do you think you might come out with a third for a trilogy?
I don't know. I might come out with a third for a trilogy. We'll see.
You'll see how it goes.
Yeah, because there's so much back history with Bane and how he got to be a werewolf and how he met Hecuba and how they just were throughout the ages. So
mm-hmm.
that has potential.
Mm-hmm. Great. So where can readers find out more about The Wolf's Torment and your other books? What's your website?
It's sgcarden.tripod.com.
Okay.
And go on.
Your books can be purchased there?
No, I usually direct people to Amazon.com,
okay.
Barnes & Noble's, or iUniverse. They actually have a bookstore as well.
Okay, great. So I wanted to congratulate you as well regarding your short story, The Music Box, that it was an honorable mention in the 75th Annual Writer's Digest competition last year. How did it feel to be mentioned?
Oh, I was just tickled pink. I couldn't believe it. I was just very happy. The note they sent with the certificate said there were over 19,000 entries for the competition.
Wow.
And I was just blown away, because the first 100 in each competition were the honorable mentions.
Wow.
So, and in fact, the story actually scored 32.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, that's great. Wow.
19,000, that is incredible.
I'm getting very good here. I'm getting better.
Absolutely. How can listeners read The Music Box? Is that on your website?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
The story's on the website.
Okay, great.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for talking with us today. We really appreciate it. Best to you with The Wolf's Torment. It's a fantastic story, and we certainly encourage listeners to go out and find a copy for themselves today. So thanks so much, Stephanie. I hope to have you back for Twilight Over Moldavia.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, listeners, there you go. We've been talking with Stephanie Carden. The book is The Wolf's Torment. It's out in stores now. I believe that you can order through local and online booksellers, so please do check it out. Her website, sgcarden.tripod.com. As well, for a recent book review and online interview, you can go to readerviews.com. So thanks so much for listening today. This has been Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.